Chapter 6, Living Hand to Mouth. Hamilton Hall is a 100-year-old red brick building built in the Gothic Revival style. It is named after Alexander Hamilton, whose larger-than-life statue stands out front. The building's upper floors are devoted to classrooms and faculty offices, while its lowest, the basement, is given over to administrative offices, including the office of the dean. Entering the building, I headed downstairs, where I presented myself to the receptionist. Telling him who I was there to see, he relayed word back to Central Command. A short while later, the dean's personal secretary, a matronly woman wearing a conservative suit the color of an exam blue book, came out to escort me back. Her shiny black hair matched her shiny black shoes. No pleasantries were exchanged en route, nor did she show the slightest maternal concern for my injuries. I had to pass through a metal detector. It was a safety measure arising from an ugly incident during the 1970s when a disgruntled student, upset over his grades, ungraciously pumped 5 bullets into the then-acting dean. Miraculously, the dean survived, but the permanent change it had wrought was reflected by the screening equipment. Reaching her office, she indicated an empty chair against the wall. I sat down and began waiting. After quite a spell, I inquired if she could tell me how much longer I would have to wait. She volunteered that she couldn't say. I had a sneaky suspicion this wait was fully intentional, but I also concluded there was no way I could ask to be excused to come back later. I tried meditating with my eyes closed. I must have nodded off because my head suddenly snapped to attention with the ringing of bells sounding in unison throughout the building. A few seconds later, from far off, came the sound of voices flowing out of classrooms. The chatter moved to the stairwells, where the sound of hundreds of shuffling footsteps turned into thunderous, cascading footfalls. The crash bar handles of the front doors banged open noisily, and student voices were raised another notch or two as they stepped out of doors. Glancing up at the line of casement windows that ran along the south-facing wall, I watched as a procession of pant legs passed by on the other side of the shrubbery. All moving in the same direction, they resembled the lower half of a Chinese dragon on parade. By degrees, the cavalcade of legs thinned out until it became just a few stragglers going by, and then ceased altogether. There was a slackwater pause, during which no legs passed by from either direction. Then, the tide reversing, the centipede procession came on again, heading the opposite way and re-entering the building. The secretary was paying not the slightest heed. Closing my eyes again, I listened as the previous sounds were repeated in reverse order. The doors of the front portals opening, the loud voices modulating slightly, then the marching steps climbing the staircases, not quite as thunderous as the footfalls descending had been. The cacophony of voices tapered off into murmurs as the hallways cleared, then were pinched off completely as the classroom doors were shut. Finally, the shrill bells sounded in unison again, and the quiet of the lecture hall descended once more. Another round of classes had begun. Pretty much the same way it's been happening for the past quarter millennium. After what seemed like another quarter millennium, the dean's secretary finally said, "You may go in now." I smiled as I rose. She returned a frosty look, about like a juror does who has already found you guilty. That was it, I figured. My diploma must be toast. Passing through a narrow entryway, somewhat uncomfortably suggestive of a birth canal, I entered Dean Simmons' cloistered office. He was seated on the opposite side of the room, behind an antique wormwood desk, possibly a relic left over from the Spanish Inquisition. Without looking up, he addressed me in a dismissive tone of voice. "Have a seat, Mr. Robinson." I did as bid. The overstuffed chair had short legs, which put me at a disadvantage by rendering me a head lower than he was where he sat. Since he had not even looked up, he obviously had made no move to rise or shake hands. With one arm in his lap and the other holding what appeared to be a fountain pen, he continued bent over his task, like a monk illuminating a sacred text. My impression was that he looked like a humorless Friar Tuck. His tonsured bald head was surrounded by a fringe of wispy brown hair, somewhat suggestive of both the dome of Low Library and its surrounding shrubbery. His eyebrows, bushy as woolly bear caterpillars, appeared as if they were busy crawling off in opposite directions. Above them he had deep-set worry lines etched in his forehead, like a stave of music that had yet to be scored. He had another set of worry lines around his pursed mouth. Dean Simmons wore the traditional dark blue blazer. This one had an embroidered patch sewn over his left breast pocket, showing an heraldic lion rearing up on its hind legs. Beneath it was the university motto, "In lumine tuo videbimus lumen." Translated meant, "In thy light shall we see the light." I was seeing a fair amount off his head. "Tell me, Mr. Robinson, are you familiar with the fact that 3 U.S. presidents have attended this university?" "No." "2 signers of the Declaration of Independence?" "I wasn't aware of that." "82 Nobel Prize winners and counting?" "That many." "Do you know what all these people had in common?" I didn't bother taking a guess. I figured he was going to tell me anyway. "Each one of them bestowed honor and dignity on this institution." He paused for dramatic effect. "Whereas you, Mr. Robinson, have not, have you?"
"Not yet."
"In fact, you have done just the opposite." "I didn't murder her, Dean Simmons. I only found her body."
"So the police tell me, but they won't tell me how they know that. Were you so informed?"
"No." "How many parties did you attend last night?"
"Parties? A couple."
"How much alcohol did you consume?"
"None. I'm not allowed to."
"Mr. Robinson, I am not concerned at this moment with whether or not you have violated any of the rules of your probation, but the matter I have before me is considerably more serious than that. We want to know, I want to know from you, did you consume enough of anything that might have caused you to black out any portion of last night?"
"No. The only part I blacked out was after the security guard clubbed me unconscious while I wasn't looking."